The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
We hear things in the deep dark night. We see things in the shadows, in the corners of our eyes. In mind and dim light, we sense things when they just aren't right. Our dealings are not with human flesh and bone, but rather with an essence that defies even the basic laws of nature, like space and time. These elusive cells challenge our logical minds, forcing us to take faith in the unseen, the unsubstantiated. We cling to theory, statistical inevitability, and the imminent manifestation of mystery. Brought to you by WKTV, I'm one of your ghost hosts, Wayne Preston Curtis Thomas. Welcome to another episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. First of all, let's meet our other ghost host. Both are paranormal podcast pros.
Ooh, yes. So that you're looking at me, right? So as the pro.
Paranormal podcast pro.
Exactly. One of the originals, almost. Kim Colleen, I'm from Holland, Michigan. Former owner and operator of Tulip City Ghostbusters, been with Grand Rapids Paranormal Podcast for 3 years now. Thank you.
My name is Jose, Paranormal History Productions YouTube channel.
And now you're with Grasp.
Yeah, I just recently joined Grasp, yeah.
So ghost hunting with Grasp, one of our
first guests, yeah, too.
Yeah.
I think they were like our fifth episode. We had him on a couple times.
Yeah.
But yeah.
One of the very well-respected paranormal team in this area. Our guest has been on this show a number of times. I think 10 times in all.
Really? Has it been that much?
Because you co-hosted a couple times. Yep. Yeah. Chetan Noir.
Hi, everyone.
She's a Michigan-based paranormal author and a travel journalist.
I do travel and I do write about the locations that I go to, but mostly now it's weird travels.
Okay.
So places that you might not have heard about, but haunted B&Bs, weird little cryptid festivals, haunted locations, cool little museums, stuff like that.
Okay.
We love promoting authors and we had you on the show. Lake Monsters and Creatures of the Great Lakes, your first book.
Yep.
We've talked about this one before, previous podcast. And then Mothman, a little thicker book here. This covers more than just Mothman.
Now. Right. It's Mothman and other flying creatures of the Midwest. So Mothman being probably the most popular one, but there's gargoyles, there's thunderbirds, there's Ropins, which are the, name for like the pterosaurs and stuff like that. So all the cool flying cryptids.
Reports of like prehistoric animals.
Yep, that would be the pterosaurs, yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Cool.
And to fight fire with fire, we haven't really talked about this one. This is like
that's an old one, yeah.
And then you have a newer book, the newest book.
Yep. So the newest one in my cryptid lines would be The Marvelous Misadventures of Tegan Gray versus Bigfoot. And it's real photography of her going around our yard, interacting with a Bigfoot-type creature because he crashes her tea party and she wants to know what his problem is.
Well, first of all, you need to understand that people don't know who Tegan Gray is right now.
No, but I should have brought her with me.
I know, she's been to the studio before.
She is a delightful little creature.
She's a dog, everybody. She's a fascinating little dog.
Yep.
So and she's got more outfits than the normal woman.
A little miniature pincher. She's the joy of my life. She's 7 pounds of fury. But yes, she does like her costumes and her clothing. And this book focuses on, this is her book that is about her little adventures with Bigfoot hunting.
So it's a children's book.
It's a children's book, yes.
Not like these
No. It does give you some Bigfoot information, but it's geared for kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very much a children's book.
Yeah, it's cute. Yeah. And then the newest thing that happened, I guess, would be with the magazines.
Yes, so I am now the owner of Squatch GQ Magazine Publications. And this is the winter edition of 2022. This is the summer edition.
Okay.
But I also have Cryptozoology Digest magazine, Dinosauria and Prehistoric Creatures magazine. There's Into the Liminal Abyss Paranormal magazine. And then later this fall, there will be a new addition to the family of magazines, and that is Rock Hound and Prospector magazine.
How exciting.
So 5 magazines published quarterly. No, I don't sleep. So
you must have a split personality or something. I don't know how you do it.
No, I just don't get a whole lot of sleep.
Yeah, you have to be in all these places, and then you took time out to be right here in the studio again. Mm-hmm. So thanks so much.
This is something I enjoy because I love the studio.
Yeah.
If you've never been here, wow, this place is so cool. It's like you walked into 1920s New York or something like that, and it's like little downtown, you know, like you walk into it, like there's a cobblestone walkway, and there's cool little rooms, and even like the artifacts in this room are really cool. So this is always a fun podcast to do.
Now, geez, how busy can you be? Plus you go to... You and Brandon ran into each other.
Oh, yep. So I was, I got to do my first presentation at my Paracon, Michigan Paracon this year. Not my first presentation, but my first presentation for them. So it was very well received. I'm looking forward to presenting for them again. Over the weekend, I was in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, doing a Bigfoot and paranormal conference there in Jefferson County. Just got back. So, I spend most of my time in my car, my truck, or in my office. So those are my 3 places that you can usually find me.
Well, you're a professor, too. So,
yes, I am. Actually.
Hello. Right. You got to add that title because that's amazing.
I know,
tell people what class that you teach.
So I teach at actually 3 universities now.
Oh, yeah.
2 brick and mortars and then 1 that's online. So I teach at Kellogg Community College here in Michigan, the Hastings campus and the Battle Creek campus, and I offer 2 courses there, the Paranormal History of the Great Lakes and Cryptozoology of North America. I offer the same 2 classes at Owens Community College, which is in Perrysburg, Ohio. And then, because of course when you're at my Paracon, what do? You network. And I happen to get to know and talk to Patty Negri, who is fabulous. She's fantastic. But she is co-owner of a online university, University Magica. Mm-hmm. And she asked me if I would be interested in teaching. And of course, I said, hello.
Yeah.
It's not like I don't do it anyways.
Yeah.
So actually, tomorrow starts my first class. And it's Cryptozoology of North America. And the first class, which you can enroll in more classes. I don't know if you can get into the one tomorrow. It's at 2:00 Eastern time. But the first class tomorrow is on water cryptids. So things like Loch Ness Monster, Megalodon, you know, lake monsters, river monsters, all the cool things that may be still swimming in our waters today.
Oh, yeah.
So.
25 years as a cryptozoologist.
Pretty much, yes.
Now, I could give...
Actually, I think we were at 27 now.
Oh, yeah, 20. I've been saying 25 since I've known you.
Yeah, right.
And that's been like 4 years.
Right. But so I can go to Webster's Dictionary and they can give me a definition of cryptozoology. But what is
So to me, cryptozoology is the search for hidden creatures. So things that we do not think exist anymore. Easiest explanation would be like the Tasmanian tiger in Tasmania. They say it's extinct, but people are still having sightings. So scientists say it's extinct, but the local people say, no, it's not. We're getting footage of it. We're hearing its calls. They're still out there in the wild. But because humans hunted them to extinction, they have learned to hide from humans. Hello, wouldn't you do that? But in a much broader sense, this covers things like Bigfoot or Sasquatch, Mothman, Dogman, lake monsters, dinosaur-type creatures, from your raptor-type creatures to pterosaurs, which are flying reptiles. I understand all the paleontologist guys out there. I understand the difference. Gotcha. Marine reptiles like plesiosaurs, mosasaurs. All these creatures that people think don't exist anymore, and yet people are still seeing and having experiences with. And so to me, that's what cryptozoology is. Trying to rationalize and explain what people are seeing and experiencing out there in the world and falling back on the database of other eyewitness sightings, other explanations of what these creatures are, looking at folklore, looking at myth, looking at the Native American stories, looking at the fossil records, and just the human like consciousness, you know, as a complete reference library, what are people seeing out there?
Yeah.
Right.
I love that you brought up the Tasmanian tiger.
Yes.
Because supposedly it's gone.
Supposedly.
But there's people still seeing it.
Right.
And I don't know if you're familiar with what it looks like. It's more of a canine.
Yeah.
But it has the stripes on it.
Yep.
Okay.
That's why it got called, it's xylothine is, I believe, the name of that. But it does, it looks like a mix between
a dog mouth.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Huge jaw.
And you have to remember that the one that they, that we have actual film footage of that lived at the Tasmanian Zoo, that animal is an older animal, so he was not in his best condition. His care was not, to me, it wasn't that great because, okay, why would you leave an animal outside? Because that's how he died. He froze to death.
Oh, no.
Because they left him outside, in the outside part of his enclosure. Now, granted, that was in the early 1900s, and the mindset in zoos has changed quite a bit. Because you just can't go out and get another, you know, Tasmanian tiger or an elephant or even tigers. You know, there's protocols that you have to go through and you have to explain what happened to the old one. And so, you know, it's the husbandry and upkeeping of these animals has become a more responsible, more well thought out process.
It needs to
for
be.
The animals. Yeah. That, you know, we're looking at preservation and conservation now instead of, oh, hey, here's just something cool that's on display.
Right.
We can go to a museum to see that.
Yeah.
But personally, I don't want to have to go to a museum to see the skeleton of a tiger or what a tiger's coat looked like. That's for T-Rexes.
Apparently, white rhinos, there's only two left.
Unfortunately, yes.
And they're both female, a mother and daughter. So that's going to be...
Your living populations for a lot of your large herbivores and carnivores are at zoos now.
Yeah.
And where they can be protected.
Yeah. So I go to Florida a lot, and I love swimming. And
she escapes.
Yeah.
I do.
Still?
We are in Michigan. Yeah. She's an escape artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm back in Florida again in like 3 weeks. And I spend a lot of time around the Gulf of Mexico shores there around St. Petersburg. And it's very popular to go diving for megalodon teeth.
Yes.
So that area, you'll be surprised because I follow some Facebook groups that they go diving for megalodon teeth. And it seems like most people find these megalodon teeth.
Well, what you have to understand is the design of a shark, including their teeth, has not changed since prehistoric times.
But these teeth, I'm not kidding you, are like this big. Why are we still finding megalodon teeth out there?
So, because
you would think by now the population has depleted.
No. So even with modern day great whites, and I know megalodon is not related to the great white. It's actually its own class, Otutus. But if you watch any of the Shark Week programs and you see the sharks like biting the shark cage, and those white things you see popping out of there, and those are teeth.
Yeah.
They have a conveyor belt of teeth that just replace over their lifetime.
There's so many megalodon teeth out there still at this point in time. People are actively finding huge amounts of megalodon teeth.
When you consider one great white shark can produce, I think it's up to 10,000 teeth in its lifetime.
Okay.
One shark, 10,000 teeth. Now, we know that, obviously, like with great whites, there is a whole population around the world of great whites. That was the same with megalodons.
Okay.
They were everywhere. So whenever they bit something hard, a tooth would pop out.
Yep.
And so, I mean, anywhere that there's
you can walk
water
along the shore, and you can find shark teeth along the shore of the Gulf of Mexico, right in Florida. But you have to actually dive out pretty far to find the megalodons. Those aren't washing up as much.
I know, because there's a couple of people that I follow on YouTube, and they go into the river systems.
Yes.
Where they are actually in the river, and they're, you know, they're only in like waist deep water. But they go down with these mesh, you know, shakers, and when they come up, they have fossilized teeth of megalodon, of prehistoric animals.
That's on my to-do list.
All things. Hey, girl, we have that. We'll do it.
Okay.
Because I've got a wetsuit now.
But they are finding all, I mean, like full body carcasses of prehistoric animals in like the mud.
Yep.
You know?
And when you stop and think that North America wasn't always above water.
Right.
For a very long time period, we had something called the Western Interior Sea that cut from the Gulf of Mexico all the way up to British Columbia. And that cuts right through the Dakotas, Wyoming, Utah, you know, all these places that we know are fossil quarries. But this was also where your plesiosaurs, your mosasaurs, your prehistoric sharks, your pterosaurs were all living and thriving throughout that time period. And then if you watch the way that water changes its route, its passage, some of those waterways came up into the Great Lakes area. Some of them cut across to the West Coast. So really, there's the potential anywhere to find fossils. Now, Michigan, we kind of got cheated because when the glaciers came through, it scraped everything to the south. So fossils that you're finding in southern Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Tennessee could very well be Michigan fossils. We want them back.
Sure.
Yeah.
They got pushed down, is what you're saying.
Like you're scraping off a plate. That's what the glaciers did to the land surface of Michigan. So we do have a wonderful fossil record here in Michigan, but you're going to find it in the northern part of the state, across the fingertips, going from Traverse City all the way across to Alpena. And that's where we're finding the corals,
We have the Petoskey stones.
Yeah.
All those cool, you can just go up and walk along the lake shorelines and you will find your quota. You can take 25 pounds home per year of fossils or rocks from the lake shores. But you can fit quite a few, rocks into your bag for 25 pounds.
And the Petoskey stone is actually a fossilized coral.
It's a hexagonal coral,
which means that one time we were tropical.
Yes.
Here.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then you're out monster hunting, and I've been watching that Monster Quest. And you said you just had an interview with someone from Monster Quest. which I thought was interesting.
I was just on Doug and Alex Hychek's show last week, I believe it was. And Doug Hychek was the producer and director of Monster Quest.
Okay.
And that in itself is impressive. But when you think of what that show accomplished, he was the first person to get underwater footage of a giant squid. That is awesome.
I want to talk about the giants, because it's not just giant squids. There's giant anaconda.
Uh-huh.
There's giants all over that are turning up. Jellyfish, giant jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's going on? All of a sudden we're growing monsters?
No. And that's the thing, is the anacondas, they are already huge.
Right. Yeah.
So a 25-foot anaconda in South America is a normal thing.
Yeah, but we got them in the Everglades.
A normal thing. But in the Everglades, we've got Burmese pythons. Yeah, we've got, you know, Florida, because that is an import center for invasive species. And they've actually, you know, cut down on that quite a bit. Because the problem was hurricanes would come in, and these warehouses where all these shipments of exotic creatures would come in would get hit by a hurricane, and all those animals would get released. So Florida has a lot of things living and thriving there that shouldn't be there. Anacondas, Burmese pythons, chimpanzees, iguanas, cobras. That's just a small, that's like five species out of hundreds that are running around Florida like, yes, this is the greatest place on earth. Meanwhile, humans are going,
They were just chasing some chimpanzees
on
one of the shows I just saw recently. But I was watching, and I go, wait a minute, I know this story. This is out of Chatan's book about the Thunderbird.
Yes.
And it was Ohio, was it?
Or no, Illinois? That's Illinois.
Illinois. Yes. Right.
Lawndale, Illinois. Yep.
This says the most famous report of a Thunderbird. It picked up a 65-pound child, carried him 35 to 40 feet, and it was witnessed by his mother, and then there was another kid out in the yard,
and,
too.
And I believe there was neighbors who were present, because everybody had dinner there, and then they were cleaning out the camper, and the boys were playing in the side yard when one of them realized that these birds were circling and then started to approach very quickly. And one of the boys jumped in the pool, one of the boys dove into the bushes, and unfortunately, the boy who grabbed up, Marlon, he was the only one that it could grab, and the bird actually grabbed him and picked him up and started flying with him. So.
And Monster Quest, they go in and they put these guys under the test to see if they're lying or not. Yeah, they hook them up to the machine.
I need to watch. What channel is
Monster Quest? It's actually a very old show.
Oh.
It came out in the early 2000s, but to me, it is still the standard by which all other cryptid shows need to be judged, because they do their due diligence.
How are you watching this?
Oh, it's on
Netflix. It's on
Prime. Oh, it is? Okay.
They even air it sometimes on...
Defy channel, I think I get it on.
Yeah, or like Discovery or Travel Channel.
Sure. I got hooked on Lore. Have you watched Lore? I think it might be on Amazon Prime.
I think I have.
Oh, yes. Is that some good shows about one of the people, this was back in the olden days, where they believed the fairies.
Okay.
About fairies and stuff like that. We're getting off subject, but...
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. Fairies. Who knows what's off subject for Chatan?
I know.
I don't know.
I honestly, except for the Nain Rouge, I have not really done any research into fairies. And I was just up on Mackinac Island. And of course, as I'm going to Mackinac Island, Todd Clemmings is leaving Mackinac Island to go up to my Paracon. And he's like, guess we'll have to do it another time. I'm like, but I was so mad after walking up hills all day long on Mackinac Island. I was like, I did not remember that from being a kid. And he's like, you went up the easy hill, because we went up to from like past the Grand Hotel to the the very nice museum stable that they have there. And I'm like, this is not funny.
Did you do the ghost hunt there? What you did?
No, my friend and I just went over there, and we wanted to hit all the horse places, the horse museum, carriage museum and stuff. She's developing her own magazine series called Enchanted Equines. And one of the articles she wanted to write about was Mackinac Island, the horse-powered, island. And so we were there, but I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, how long is this hill? And I'm like, it's gotta be a mile up. It's gotta be just a mile. And he's like, you were going up the easy one. I'm like,
yeah. Todd Clements, for anybody that doesn't know
him. Oh, yeah, Todd.
He's an author.
Yes.
And he's a paranormal author.
Hi, Todd.
Hey, yeah. Todd.
And what's the name of his books? The Haunted Mackinac?
Yeah.
Haunted Mackinac. Yeah,
and he does
two volumes of it.
Yes,
and he does the tours of the same.
Yep, he has the Haunted Mackinac Island tours. Yes, yes.
So yeah, real interesting guy. And but they talk about fairies and giant fairies.
Yeah, he has seen the different fairies that are up there, and knows where they're located. But he's like, the ghost tour is just on the main drag. He's like, my fairy sightings were like up the hill, and I'm like,
no.
I am not walking. Yeah. Get me a horse.
I called him last year and I said, you have any time? He goes, no, we're too busy. And then having trouble getting help like everybody is up there. So he was advertising for help.
Yeah, it's not, I know people live there year round, but I'm like, that's like hard,
Right. That's like off the grid, man.
Yeah. It is, because the one, if you don't know Mackinac Island, if people are from Michigan or like outside of Michigan watching this, there's no motorized vehicles allowed on Mackinac Island. You take a ferry there and then one to get back to like Mackinac Island or Mackinac City or St. Ignace. And everything is either you're walking or
biking.
A bike or horse powered.
Yep.
So if you're good at riding a horse, but it's, it's quite expensive to rent a horse for the day to ride around. So, it's like pack your own.
Yeah. I think it's money well spent. You talk about the monsters in Michigan, lake monsters. And one of the things you talked about was the muskie. And they actually talked about this on my show, Monster Quest. They found a jaw of a muskie. And then so they reconstructed how big this thing would be if it was still alive. And it was like 70 inches, 70 pounds. So almost 6 foot long muskie with canines that are like this long.
And that's an old report. But I believe it was it last year? I think it was last summer. Somebody pulled a 6 foot sturgeon out of the Detroit River, a female. They measured it, they collected the DNA sample, and then they released her. So that is probably a 200-year-old fish. She will probably never be caught again because it's very difficult to hook a sturgeon because of their bony jaws. There's nothing, like no soft tissue for your hooks to hook into. So that fish, we don't know. Could she live to be 400 years old?
Mm-hmm.
We know that Greenland sharks, the bigger they are, the older they are. So they believe that there are 400-year-old Greenland sharks swimming around Iceland and Greenland today. There might be older ones.
So this muskie, it's a fish.
Yes.
Of some sort.
Muskelaga.
Okay.
Muskie for short.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they are very similar to like the lake sturgeons. And
no. So are we thinking they're still around?
Oh yeah, muskies are in all the Great Lakes, and sturgeons are still on all the Great Lakes.
But they're monstrous size. Yes.
I mean, 6 foot long, really?
Yeah.
With large canines, yeah. This jaw, they thought it was a jaw of some other kind of a wild animal, a mammal, because of the canines on it, until they realized what it was.
And they have teeth. They have teeth like a cat.
So they did DNA, and then they found out it was this muskie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Northern pike is similar, not nearly as big.
Pikes muskies and sturgeons are all very similar. And the fascinating thing is the ones in the Great Lakes are the small ones.
Oh, Jesus.
There's ones in Alaska and Siberia and Russia that 12 foot is the small. But the, like the beluga sturgeon are almost extinct because they have over-harvested them for their caviar, their eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And because caviar used to be a very cheap food.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. It's not, because it became more and more popular as a food source. Same with clams, oysters, stuff. Back in the 1920s, that was easy harvest food, you know, just pull in a net and collect it. Well, now the stuff that used to be easy and cheap to get is the expensive stuff to get.
Right.
Lobsters, crayfish, stuff like that used to be dirt cheap. Now you're paying, you know, like $40 for a lobster.
Right.
That probably is radioactive.
Oh, so, great. I just ate that this week. Great.
No. Good for you. In your books, you talk about, you cover pranks and hoaxes, optical illusions that are on the water.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about the history. You talk about the real life monsters, which we've covered some of those already, and the prehistoric ones. I can understand maybe a Goliath grouper, you know, out in the salt water. It's big enough to swallow a person. But people are seeing these prehistoric animals. I mean, this thing with the long pointed head and the long jaw and the wings.
Plesiosaur. Well, those are pterodactyls. But in the water, you would be looking at like the plesiosaurs and the mosasaurs.
And then another one of the prehistoric things that they had in Monster Quest, it looked more like a dinosaur with the long neck. It looked like its neck looked like...
That would be a plesiosaur. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can understand mammoth things growing big, but where in the heck are these things coming from? Crawling out of a hole somewhere?
So
coal mine?
The thing about, if we're talking about the Great Lakes...
Oh, no, this wasn't during this one.
Okay, so you're talking about something more like a brontosaurus. Okay, so I do not think that there's been any sauropods, which is the long necks, brachiosauruses, apatosauruses, diplodocus, stuff like that. Those have not been reported, at least that I know of, really in North America. But we do get reports of those from the Africa regions, and supposedly that is what they think the Mekelle-Mbembe is a sauropod-type creature. Now, I have never talked to any of the tribes people who have a knowledge of the Mekelle-Mbembe. I've never been there to research it. So... I can only, you know, reference it as information that I have gathered from reading books, watching TV shows, documentaries. But I think a lot of times we, as, you know, thinking that we're sophisticated, you know, high-tech people, we dismiss what people living in a certain area claim that they experience. And I think that needs to stop, because who are we to tell people in Africa or Alaska or New Zealand or tropical islands or anywhere else, no, you didn't see that. We know because we're experts. We don't live in that area.
Yeah.
We don't 100% know. We're on the food chain. Everything falls and where everything lives. We have an idea of it. But every year, that idea gets changed because suddenly something shows up in an area where everybody else is like, you're not supposed to be here. And yet the species is like, I've lived here all my life.
Yeah, I think maybe there are some remote areas still, some jungles that are out there that man hasn't really been to. And so there's things that are undiscovered still.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and apparently they're showing up once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, jungles are always a cool, you know, rainforests are always, you know, a cool place that there's always something new to find.
Yeah.
The problem is they are very foreboding places to go, and most people don't want to go into the jungles or the forests because there are so many things that can kill you in there, yeah, you know.
I don't want to.
Yeah, centipedes like this long.
Yeah. Right?
No, thank yeah. you.
I hardly even want to go out in the woods anymore.
Right.
Because I don't want to get a tick on me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I know the ticks.
I love to go hiking, and that's like one of my, because I always take my dogs hiking with me, and I'm like, I hate ticks.
Yeah.
I hate ticks.
But believe it or not, I mean, there's monsters really just at, right on the shores of Florida, because mm-hmm. when I would walk along the shores of like St. Petersburg, you could see this jellyfish had come up to shore. We didn't know if it was alive or dead. You could see through its body. Yep. It was almost like iridescent type yep. thing. You could actually see the innards of it.
Yep.
And this thing was about this high and about this big. Now, if that's, I mean, that's a monster. I mean, that is one
bigger.
There's
some that like they form a colony, and it's like an underwater garden.
Like I couldn't believe this thing.
Not a garden you would want to swim through, because they will sting. And
one of the most poisonous things in the ocean is the jellyfish.
Uh huh. And the most poisonous one is, we're talking about a jellyfish smaller than my pinky fingernail. It's the irukandji, the box jellyfish. And they are potentially the most poisonous.
No.
You know.
Really? And just that little bugger.
Yes, because of the tentacles on them. And when they touch you, they sting you.
Yes.
But if you wear like nylon, like pantyhose, for some reason they can't break that barrier.
Really?
It's weird. But they know that their populations coincide with the moon. Setting, you know, the moon.
Is that why they're
phases.
Called moon jellies?
No, these are all the box jellyfish.
The box jelly is the one.
But the moon jellies are round little circles.
Yeah, I've seen those in a zoo.
But
before.
It's just like, it's just, there's so many things on this planet that can kill you. It's like, oh.
Yeah. Well, Brandon, have you ever been in the ocean?
I've been in the Gulf of Mexico. That's,
Right. You didn't run into anything like that?
No. Like for mine, when I was in the Gulf, I go up to. Maybe my waist, and that's about as far as I'll go in the water.
Hey. But you know, that's deep enough for any
for
big
still
shark
stuff,
to come get you.
Yeah.
So
I was in the Bahamas about 2 weeks ago, and I was snorkeling, and in like this area where it's sort of roped off, so they've got creatures uh-huh. in there. So it was basically snorkeling with the stingrays.
Uh-huh.
But they had stingrays that had a 6-foot wingspan, manta rays.
Yep.
So I'm like, whoa, you're bigger than what I anticipated. And also in that enclosure was a barracuda.
Yeah.
That was about this big long, and it just swims right past you, uh-huh. right? They don't do anything to you. So, but it's cool
to
see.
The first time I went out to California, I didn't swim in the ocean because Jaws had just came out.
Oh, God.
But then, I remember being a child and not wanting to ever take a bath again because, you know, the shark's going to come through the water pipes.
Through the drain.
Yeah.
But when I went to Virginia Beach, I was like Brandon. I was just like in waist, just waiting.
Yeah,
and I swear something was stinging me. I was jumping around. I started jumping around. And then the guys I was with, they started jumping around like something was stinging them too. So I don't know if I got stung by a jellyfish or what.
Yeah, but. We were, me and my friends were, not this past June, but the June before that, we went down to Maryland. Because I'm like, we're this close, we're going to go shark tooth hunting. So we went to the Culver County Marine Museum, and that's really nice. If you like fossils and you like sharks and stuff like that, that's a great place to go. But we went into the one state park and we got down on the beach, and I have my three little dogs with me, and I'm like, huh, nobody's really going out in the water.
Yeah.
So we were just on the water's edge, you know, mm-hmm. sifting through, looking for shark teeth, not finding anything. And it was hot. And so I was, all of my dogs, when they're with me, if we're going hiking or anything like that, they have harnesses on, but they also have like a 10-foot hiking lead on them. So my male dog, I was taking and I was just tossing him out in the water and letting him swim back in. And
shark bait.
2 weeks later, we get back, and I can't remember what I saw, but there was a bull shark sighting in Chesapeake Bay, and I'm like, so I searched it on the internet. I'm like, oh.
You were throwing your dog.
Apparently, that is a hotspot for sharks.
Oh.
because it goes right out into the ocean, and depending on, you know, if it's more salt water, more fresh water, the sharks you encounter, I'm like, we are never doing that again.
Yeah. I'm like, in Florida too, like where I've stayed, hammerheads will come really close up towards the people that are only maybe knee deep.
Right.
So, wow.
So you're still out monster hunting. That's what you're spending most of your time on.
Well, I'm usually either at home doing a Zoom presentation or a podcast or writing for my magazines or working on vending stuff. On the weekends, I'm usually at a Paracon.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm not doing any of that, I'm on the road going to a Paracon or going to weird locations that I want to do a story on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's busy. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So Sasquatch GQ.
Squatch GQ.
Squatch, yeah. I knew I said that wrong in my mind.
Squatch GQ.
Now, since you started doing this, do you know more about Bigfoot? Or were you already pretty knowledgeable on it before you?
There's never any point in time where you are the end-all be-all expert on cryptozoology, because there's always something new to learn. There's always new evidence. There's always somebody different to talk to who has had a different experience, and depending on what they've encountered, adds one more piece to the puzzle. And there's no pre-established puzzle of like 500 pieces. Oh no, the puzzle keeps growing.
Right.
So where are we seeing sightings now?
Everywhere.
Yeah, hot spots.
I tell people, wherever you have farms, wherever you have herds of deer, you have the potential for Bigfoot or Dogman in that area.
Well, that's like most of the United States has something of that nature.
So you don't necessarily plan on seeing one in New York City.
No.
Or downtown Detroit, Lansing, Flint, Grand Rapids. But you travel 5 miles out into the country.
Right.
And you start looking at the farms and you start looking at the lack of roadkill. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, 90s, there was roadkill all over the place.
There was, wasn't Especially there? Out
west. But now, how often do you see a large roadkill? You might see a dead skunk. You might smell the dead skunk. Or a squirrel.
Seems like you used to see more deer, dead deers
but
and stuff.
How often are we seeing the dead deer carcasses along the side of the road? Well, something's figured out. That's a cheap and easy meal.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't have to expend a whole lot of energy to wait till 4:30 in the afternoon, because I know cars are going to come along this stretch of road, flush deer out across the road, let one get hit, wait till all the human beings leave, wait till the cars, there's a gap in all the car activity, usually around 6 o'clock, grab that deer, drag it off, and we've got our meal.
Well, Michigan has a prime. We're between the swamps and all the farms and all this fresh water, especially apparently where Brandon's been going for Bigfoot training up in the Upper Peninsula.
Yeah.
The western part of the Upper Peninsula. But we have all these national forests. We have so many woods. So I think I don't know where we rate. Do you know where we rate as far as sightings for Bigfoot?
Not really. But here's the thing about reports and sightings is, in order for a sightings report to take place, a human being actually has to make it back to civilization and do the due diligence of making that report. How many people don't make it back, and how many people don't want to either acknowledge what they experienced or
because they don't want to be straitjacket or whatever,
crazy, and they never make that report. So you can go on the bare minimum of eyewitness reportings, because you have to take into your acceptance that for every, 10 reports that you get, there's probably 20 more that people have had, but they don't report.
Yeah. A lot of sightings go unreported.
Yep.
A lot of sightings come from hunters, which seem reliable because they're people that have heard these sounds.
Right.
and seen these things. In your books, you talk about people that have witnessed these monsters. These are reputable people.
Mm-hmm.
They're sea captains. They're not derelict drunks.
Right. honestly, if you wanted to get a better estimate of what areas in any state have more Bigfoot sightings, look at which counties have less hunters buying permits.
Oh.
Because a Bigfoot or a hunter who's encountered Dogman,
yeah,
Bigfoot, or any other cryptid creature, they generally never go hunting again.
Right.
And if you have one in an area,
or they never come home again, put it that way.
Right. And you have 20 hunters who have had license for 10 years and suddenly none of them are renewing their license, none, mm-hmm, of them are getting their permits.
Yeah.
That drop in numbers tells you there's something active in that area, mm, because people are seeing something. They might not be reporting it, but if they're not buying their license because they're not going out in the woods because they can't explain what that thing was that walked past their deer stand that was 20 feet in the air or higher,
yeah,
then that's telling.
Right. So
are you still the lead investigator of the,
yes,
Michigan chapter of North American Dogman,
yes,
Project?
Yes, I am. Yes.
So then you get reports? They report to you?
You know, I do get reports, but what happens is people will contact the North American Dogman Project with a eyewitness sighting in the state of Michigan, and then they will refer that person to me, and then I send them a questionnaire that they have to fill out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because I want to make sure that this person is actually wanting an investigation and has information to give and not just hoaxing.
Right. Yeah.
Hoaxes. I'm glad you brought that up because that's also in your book. Mm-hmm. You talk about hoaxes and pranks. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest hoax that you've ran into since you've been out there?
There's a lot. And I personally, I have very little tolerance for anybody who's hoaxing or trying to pull the wool over somebody's eyes.
False, yeah. False reports.
If you're going to waste my time, then I'm going to make sure the world knows that you, yeah, wasted my time, and I'm going to make sure you get called out for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably not the person to mess with.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a variety of them. And I would say, by far, Bigfoot is the one that gets hoaxed the most.
Oh, I would imagine.
Because it's so easy now with all the different technologies to create, like, fake footprints.
Sure.
Or get casts of the footprints and then make those into something that you could stamp into the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's like, really, you're going to waste your time doing that? Because how long did it take you to make that cast of footprints, make that footprint trail, and then you're going to what? Sit waiting to see if somebody reports it?
Right. Now, you know, somebody here made this. Yeah. Now, what is this?
Of course, I made that. Some of these castings, they have the mid-tarsal break.
Yes.
So, you know, where would that be on this?
So your mid-tarsal break is right here where that little curve in your foot comes.
Yeah.
And you've got that on the bottom of your foot. You have that where your foot kind of, you know, is like that.
Like an arch.
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 So your mid-tarsal break is right before that.
Okay.
And
so would this be an accurate interpretation of a Bigfoot foot? No, 20.
I'm thinking it has
20,
to be a little bit wider.
Okay.
I'm thinking it has, because they are kind of human looking.
So Wayne, what does the 17 and the 23 mean?
Well, 23, I've heard reports up to 23 or 24 inches for a Bigfoot, but more common, probably 17.
Right. Okay. So for me, that's
this
the
could
one
be
thing
a juvenile,
that,
right?
Well,
yeah. So most Bigfoots that people encounter, they say, you know, the maximum height is about 9 foot.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you scale it down to 7 foot, and you look at NBA basketball players,
right?
Okay, Shaq, for instance,
massive
foot. I don't understand, or I don't know how big his foot is. And he's a very muscular, heavily muscular, you know, guy, which to me, that would be about the, you know, size of what a adult Bigfoot should be. So if we're getting anything, I would say anything 5 inches bigger than what his foot, you know, size is, then we're looking at something that I just, you know, can't understand. Because your feet have to be in proportion with your body.
Right.
Exactly.
Because it's all about balance and how your body functions. A foot that big, you're going to have a very hard time walking through the forest because you're going to be tripping over everything. Because just as you lift up your foot to go over one object, you're catching your back foot on something. So to me, I would say, you know, 17 inches would probably be
more common.
Acceptable. I mean, I wear a size 11, and I don't know if I can hear. Okay, hold that.
Okay. Let's see here once.
Let's see. Oh, okay.
All right. Come on.
So I'm a size 11 women's foot. So, and I'm 5'8".
Yeah.
170 pounds.
That's a pretty good foot.
Yeah. So.
I don't wear a lot.
You know, we see how my foot compares to you know, the track that, you know,
yeah,
Kim's holding up.
But you don't have any mid-tarsal break.
Actually, all of you must have a mid-tarsal break.
Well, I've seen it pretty prominent in some of the castings. Some of the things that really stand out for me as far as evidence, and then you, I think, lectured on the camouflage of Bigfoot. I mean, that kind of explains why they're not being seen so much, because they're blending in with everything.
They could be standing right in the forest and then just be like, wouldn't be able to see them.
A lot of it, too. Like, if you look at, like, a lot of fallen trees and stuff,
right,
they can look like they're just a big tree stump there
that
the tree broke off of. Because, like, a lot of you look at the pictures where they claim it's a Bigfoot. Like, I look at the pictures and I'm like, that just looks like a dead tree.
Exactly. And the thing that a lot of people don't realize is when people are going hiking or for a walk through the woods or whatever, what are they doing?
Oh, yeah, probably. Right. Brandon told me about the Harry and the Hendersons at the end.
They're not paying attention.
Had the camouflage. And they stood up and walked away as they're doing the credits, I think, for Harry and the Hendersons.
I don't remember that now.
But, you know,
it's been a while since I watched that movie.
Bigfoots are an apex predator. Predators know how to hide in their surroundings. So, just like, you know, you see those pictures where it says, how many Marines do you see in this picture? And you'll see one guy with the gun. And then they show the next picture and there's like 10 of them in ghillie suits and camouflage and everything. So how many Bigfoots do you see in the picture?
Right.
And I'm not talking one of these blob squatches where the people circle it. No. People don't realize when they're out in the woods hiking, how many times you walk past something and you don't even realize it's there unless it moves.
Right.
They're made to blend in. That's how they survive. Owls, I'm not sure what you lectured on, but owls look like a tree bark. Mm-hmm. A lot of the animals just look like where they live. So the camouflage, I thought that was interesting. The smell, you know, we had Phil Shaw in here, Bigfoot guy. And he says you'll smell them before you see them.
And most people, when you smell a skunk, what do? You look to see where the skunk is, and then you go back the direction you came because you don't want to get sprayed by the skunk.
Right.
When you smell something putrid or rotting or something like that, you don't want to smell that. You'll generally turn around and go the opposite, you know, the way that you came. So what better way to modify human behavior than to put out a very bad smell that makes them go, oh.
Have you heard? What's it described it like? Is it putrid, rotten, or death?
I've heard that it smells like trash or like a wet dog or like a skunk or like something rotting. But you have to remember, Bigfoots have that fur coat year round. It's not like human beings where we go home, take a shower. And even when they go wash themselves off into, you know, a river or lake or something like that, if any type of algae or anything like that gets into their coat and starts growing, that produces a smell too. So no matter what they do, unless they're like rubbing themselves with cedar chips or something, they're going to put off a weird odor. And generally, when we smell something bad, we will turn around and go back the other way.
Right.
Because we know anything that smells that bad is probably not good for us.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a cryptozoologist, you're like, hey, I might smell a Bigfoot. And then you're looking. And then you're like,
right.
Hold on, let me look for a few more minutes.
Yikes. Infrasound is another thing
infrasound.
That I'm interested in.
Yeah, infrasound is, it will kick your butt. I have been hit with a wave of infrasound from a ghost lion. A ghost lion, not a living, breathing lion that also use infrasound, but a ghost lion.
Tigers, lions.
Uh-huh. And we were investigating at the Howl Movie Theater, and they report that there is an old circus lion that is buried close by there. And he likes the backstage area. He likes this loft area. And the gentleman leading the tour that night said, now I want you all to be quiet as we go back here, because if you wake up the lion, he gets mad. Well, everybody was wearing hard-soled shoes. So here.
Oh, great.
Magnified by 15 going back there. And we all got back there and people were being quiet. And he said, well, the lion likes to sleep up on this loft area. And it was about 5 minutes after that, we were all on the other side of the theater, in another theater, and everybody started having these pains going through their chest that were going into their shoulder blades, up their necks, and we're all like, ow, what? And almost the whole group was reporting this, and I'm like, what could affect all of us like that?
And then I was thinking, at the same time, right?
At the same time. And then I was like, he hit us with a roar. He hit us with a wave of infrasound. And I tell you, that lasts. Because even 24 hours later, into the next day and evening, I was still feeling it. So
yeah.
That was from
a ghost lion roar.
Yes, that was from a ghost lion roar. Now you
could that
imagine,
be picked up on an EVP?
They have.
Okay,
that's interesting. The people who run the tour, the ghost, the paranormal group that runs the tour there, have it on EVP.
Wow.
Of the roar. Now, you take that knowledge and you apply it to living lions.
Right.
When they're out on the Serengeti, the adult male lions, who are the bachelors. Usually it's the lionesses that hunt as a pack.
Right.
Take down wildebeest. Well, if you're one lone lion trying to take down dinner, they will blast a herd of the small gazelles with their roar, which disorients them. Then they charge in, kill the one that's been the most disoriented. That's what that roar's for.
Yeah. Interesting.
It can be
elephants can,
paralyzing.
Elephants and whales use infrasound. That sound can travel for miles.
Yeah.
And that's how elephants 5 miles away from each other can tell who's in what area and who's not.
Sure.
Yeah, that's
got the 5 minute
really
warning.
We nearly need to move on because we're almost done.
I know.
Upcoming and ongoing.
Yeah.
What do you got going? You got some conventions
so
coming
up? So in October, I have library presentations at Boyne City Public Library in Northern Michigan, Plymouth Public Library over by Northville, Livonia area, one in Nehan, Wisconsin. That's a Zoom presentation, so people can tune into that one from wherever. I've got classes starting at Owens Community College October 5th for the Cryptozoology of North America. That's an in-person class. Check out University Magica for my courses online digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And then my next big Paracon is Mid-Michigan Paranormal Convention in November at Mount Pleasant.
Excellent.
Soaring Eagle Casino.
Yeah.
And Brandon, you're with Grasp Paranormal now. You guys got anything planned?
Not for like the rest of this year, but
okay.
know you have a plan on doing an investigation of the city of Milwaukee again next year. So.
Oh, cool. The ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That would be cool.
Yeah. For us, you know, September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and with me, it's been I've been promoting the 988 three-digit number that's supposed to be mandated. It's supposed to be in effect in July in all states. Unfortunately, it's a matter of getting the legislature passed to pay for this. So 2.6 million calls came into the suicide hotline last year, so this needs to be taken care of. Hopefully they're going to get that so it's everywhere, all the states. Otherwise, 1-800-273-8255 gets you in there. If you're military, dial 1 after that. Special places for you, because we're losing every 65 minutes we lose a veteran, so that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
There's another group out there, it's the young people that are struggling with their sexuality. They're also having a real tough time with those suicides.
They say don't leave medication in your house anymore. If you're not actively taking it, get rid of it.
So good. Yeah, that's excellent. So shout out Exe Susan Smith, we had on. We did.
Ooh, she's awesome.
Yes, she is.
Right.
Ghost Magnet.
I didn't bring her book in. I didn't bring Exe's, but she had a new book out, The Dialogue with the Dead. And so, and then Brandon did Marie Cisneros, mm-hmm. who has a new book out.
Haunted Muskegon.
Haunted Muskegon. Yep. Brandon's in this book.
Yeah,
talks about him.
In there. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's in here. I got it all. Have you been through it? Because you bought the book.
Yeah, I've read most of it.
Yeah, so. I've been through it. Yeah, you're in here early and then later on in the book too.
Yeah.
So good for her and you. Shout out to Ken Decker of Kipps. We sent him a case, so he took it over because he lives in Belding and that's where the case was. Shout out to your friend in Bay City.
Yeah, Nicole Beauchamp. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. Beauchamp. She has a new book out called Haunted Detroit, and that's available for purchase right now. Check that out. That's Nicole Beauchamp.
Yeah.
So.
And then maybe they'll do a show with her later.
Yeah, we might.
And then our 68th podcast was with psychic medium Gregory Nicholas and Tanya. Our newest member.
Yeah, he was interesting.
Oh, okay. I haven't really seen that one.
Yep.
So.
Yep. That's a good show. And then, people should watch that one.
Final thought. Do you think there's anything mysterious about the full moon?
Yes, because...
Oh, we knew that was coming.
All the craziness happens on the full moon. humans, animals.
Good point.
And plus, we're in retrograde right now, and... Run,
because it's people and pets.
Yes,
that are affected by the moon.
So, you know.
So what's Tegan Gray do when there's a full moon?
Well, she's
howl.
She's just ornery, you know. To begin with, she's sweet to me, but everything else she's ornery with. So,
so she doesn't like turn into like a vicious beast.
No, her sign kind of turns into a dog myth.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yikes. if you hear me,
is he ornery?
No, he's actually very sweet, but he looks kind of like a werewolf.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I've looked like a werewolf all my life.
So. But he's a cute little brown merle poodle mix dog. And I would say if you hear me on a podcast and you hear in the background, it's the dog.
So oh, nice. Well, the only thing man. I know personally about full moons is that it's the way to charge your crystals.
Right. Yep. That's
so
on my list.
So if you don't know that, people out there, and if you love dealing with crystals and the energy involved with crystals, if you feel like they could be depleting in energy, put them out in the moonlight. Yep. They will recharge themselves to be full strength again.
Not only crystals can recharge your emotions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Brandon, you ever have any experience in a full moon?
No.
No? You don't. We talked about how the storm could lead to ghost hunting. Mm-hmm. What about the full moon? You think that can lead to anything?
It's always a potential. There's different, you know, stuff kind of going on that's bigger than...
There's a lot of gravity involved.
Yeah.
It controls the tides.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It also controls your blood pressure somewhat. And according to what I read, it women's brain function...
Do we get smarter? Because no, that would probably...
Your sexual drive increases.
Oh, great.
No, come on. I only have two women here. No?
It's balarkey.
It's baloney.
It's baloney.
Yikes. So it's supposed to be...
I ain't got time for that kind of thing.
Right. It's supposed to help your emotions and even amplify your dreams. And it's for ceremony and ritual. And so a lot of stuff happens. That's when the witches go out and do their rituals. And there's ceremonies, I think, under a full moon.
Shatan and I are going to go out and do our pagan rituals, right? In the full moon, right?
It represents the divine feminine. So more women than men, but it affects, men similar, I think. And then there's 12 to 13 full moons in a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so every month pretty much has their own full moon.
Right.
And then they have nicknames for all the
there's different blue moons, there's harvest moons, there's strawberry moons.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different
moons. Yep, for each one. Yeah, exactly right. The sturgeon moon,
yes.
The buck moon, the worm moon, the wolf moon. Yeah, each one has its own nickname.
But,
so maybe it affects us. They say that's when the crazies come out. I don't know.
Ask anybody who works in an ER or for a EMS unit or any emergencies, they will tell you everything picks up on a full moon.
Okay, well, it's the inspirational thought, and then the show's over. And I always try to pick something that relates to our guest. This one comes from Naeem Calloway. And because Shatan is so, into everything, energy and all that, and just taking that move to keep moving on, that's why I picked this quote.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the smallest step in the right direction ends up being the biggest step of your life. Tiptoe if you must, but take that step. So.
And she has.
Yeah, yeah. You have. You're good example to not only women, but to everybody out there in the paranormal world.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Love
She's
having you on the
show. Leap, more or less, right?
So this was fun.
It was fun.
I always love being here.
Yeah, you're awesome.
Seeing you, Kim,
thank
again
you.
In the studio. Brandon, we've been in the studio a couple times now.
Yeah.
So, but having you back in the studio, full circle.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. I love it here.
Peace out.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
This episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.